Powerful Radio is pleased to present Church of the Masses with award-winning Catholic columnist, screenwriter, and media consultant, Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello, welcome back to Church of the Masses on the Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network. My name is Barbara Nicolosi. I am a screenwriter, producer, theater producer, development executive in Hollywood. I've done a lot of stuff, including being the founder of a program called Act One, which is ongoing right now in Hollywood for executive students and who want to be executives or screenwriters and television writers. And I just spoke to their first their first session on Saturday. And so if you want to be part of the Hollywood thing in some way, you want to learn this business, Act One is a really good place to start. Unfortunately, you missed your chance this summer, so you'll have to throw your hat in the ring next summer. Hopefully, they'll still be around. So what we do here at Church of the Masses is we talk about the intersection of faith and culture. I interview people who are making culture or people who are astute commentators on it. I talk to actors and painters and writers, producers, anybody who's not just cursing the darkness, as many of us in the church are wont to do as regards the culture. I want to spotlight people who are actually making something good for the people of our time and for the future. So we just have to stop waiting for people who are not in our community to make culture that is going to bespeak our values. It's ridiculous. They're making stuff that they want to watch. So we need to make stuff that we want to watch or listen to or be inspired by. So if that's your kids, then great. Help them go to the best schools they can. Help them get their act together as Catholics and then send them into the ring. So what I do here is I look at news of the day first, and then in our second and third segments today, we're going to continue our interview with Sister Helena Raphael of the Daughters of St. Paul. We're talking about theology of the body as it pertains to the arts. It was a really interesting conversation last week, and we're going to pick it up because we got such a good response and do a little bit more there. But what I want to do right now is cover some news of the day that's interesting to people of faith. And so one thing I want to point out to you, if you haven't heard about it, it's Chernobyl. And when I talk about Chernobyl, I don't mean the site of the nuclear accident in the Soviet Union. I mean the show about the site of the nuclear accident in the Soviet Union. This show was, it just absolutely barnstormed everybody this season in the entertainment industry. I think it was five episodes, a miniseries, about the Chernobyl accident. And it was on HBO, and now you can watch it on Amazon Prime, or I think Hulu might have it too. So why is Chernobyl getting so much attention? Well, I'm going to be reviewing it in a subsequent episode here of Church of the Masses, but I just want to give you a heads up about it and point you to it. I think it's quite amazing and some of the best television that I've seen in a long time, and that isn't a cop show. You know, we have a lot of great shows. We interviewed Tom Bernardo of Bosch not long ago, cop show, you know, The Wire, I think, is one of the all-time greatest. Homicide: Life in the Streets, another super, super show. But this one, Chernobyl, is not a crime show. It is a recounting of the things that the accident that happened and then the fallout, literally, from that. And when you say, like, what is the real theme of Chernobyl? Is it commentating on socialism, you know, the socialist government of the Soviet Union? You know, what is the idea of it? Is it talking about a kind of diatribe against nuclear power? And the answer is no and no. I think that if you stand back from Chernobyl and say, what is this about? It's about lies. It's about what lies do, how we tell them, why we tell them, and how they cause so much trouble in human society, and that the Chernobyl accident was terrible, but it became a human tragedy of unspeakable proportions because of the lies that started surrounding it immediately by the government, by everybody. So check out Chernobyl on HBO, and as I say, I'm going to review it in a couple weeks, but it's a surprising little piece there and amazingly well-written and well-acted, very Yeah, it's a period piece that is not feel dated at all. So I'm going to recommend that. So another thing I really wanted to point to this week is the irony. You know, there's one thing about the left. The American left has no sense of irony. And one of my favorite writers, Tom Sowell, says about leftists is that they have this quality called the vision of the anointed, which grants them a dispensation from all of the things they require of everyone else. That is, they, because they are in a messianic kind of position in terms of seeing what's wrong with everyone else and the world, they are allowed to dispense themselves from what they're asking everyone else to do to fix it. Now, I just had to point this week to the release of the new album by Madonna. And this is just, to me, a really funny story. So I think that this is Madonna's like 15th album, something like that. And so she noted that, no, it's her 14th album, sorry. It's called Madam X, and it just came out. And she noted that she used to have nightmares about Whitney Houston, who was her big rival. They were both chart toppers, and that she used to have nightmares that Whitney Houston was going to push her off the charts. But now she's in no danger of pushing anybody off the charts anymore. She's not an A-list superstar in the music business at all. But I want to point to album, apparently, you know, they're reviewing it favorably in Variety and in other places, kind of saying, well, you know, the old gray mare ain't what she used to be, but she's doing some daring things now. But there is, of course, in this album, the anti-Trump diatribe that she called God Control. And she says, this is a wake-up call. She sings under a shimmering strobe-like groove. I think I understand why people get a gun, but the only gun is in my brain. Anyway, so she goes on from there. But one of the funny things about the album is that she sings this one song where she says she puts herself in association with everyone who is downtrodden. And I'm getting to the point here. But the downtrodden, and she says, you know, I am like the people of Africa if they are being forgotten. And, you know, I am like the gay person if they are being persecuted. And so she associates herself with all those who are downtrodden. And isn't that wonderful? And you say, okay, yes. But at the same time, I happen to catch a story today on Celebrity News and Radar Online specifically, dated June 13th. Where the headline is Madonna's Gone Plain Loco Inside the Singer's Ridiculous List of Diva Demands on Her New Private Jet. So what it basically the story is detailing how she has all of these very, very specific demands that, you know, she needs her cryogenic chamber on board any plane that she goes on. She needs her two facial specialists. She needs Kabbalah, a free seat on her jet for her Torah scroll, which she calls Rebecca because of her Kabbalah practice. And then she also insists that everyone on her tour only calls her M, and then just has this huge list of diva demands that she needs an upright piano in her suite, and she needs arrangements of pink roses and a large piece of imported Parmesan cheese, two ripe avocados, and a tray of, quote, beautifully displayed whole organic seasonal fruit, unquote. Now, I just mentioned this because this is the same person who, in her new album, associating herself to the downtrodden. I am the people of Africa. I am the poor gay person persecuted. And yet she doesn't seem to make the connection that being a diva in all of these demands undermines her claims to being one with the downtrodden. So I think the message here, not to pick on poor Madonna, you know, it must be hard to go from being, you know, the sex symbol, kind of outrageous center of the pop world, to being utterly irrelevant and, in fact, replaced by someone as minimally talented as Taylor Swift, right? You know, Taylor Swift has a bigger fan base now than Madonna could even claim to. And, in fact, Madonna is yesterday, right? She's yesterday. She's having a hard time dealing with that. But I think the bigger lesson is this problem of celebrity, that when people get recognition for their artistic talent, they begin to tell themselves that it's because they themselves are something special. Not, oh, God has given me a power, a talent through which I'm meant to uplift and inspire my fellow humans. No, I myself am someone special. I am kind of divine. And we see this happen over and over and over again. And it's the reason why so many people in Hollywood have to tell us all the time how we should vote, you know, or they just can't resist kind of chastening us. So you had Jennifer Aniston just this week telling everyone that she's not going to support, you know, any projects to be shot in Georgia because of their pro-life law. And it's like, who cares, Jennifer? Who are you? You're an actor. You're someone who reads other people's lines for a living. Why should you think that any of us would care what you do and that, it, you know, tried your efforts to try to shame or coerce an entire state in a fundamental issue of our day is so unseemly. But you see it over and over. And so a lot of times I meet young people who want desperately to have big Hollywood careers, right? They want very much to make it in music and in the movies. And I sometimes say, you know, it may be a blessing from God that you're not making it, because most people can't handle the power of celebrity. It corrupts them. All right. Well, stay tuned for our second and third segments. We're going to talk again about the theology of the body with our special guest, Sister Helena Raphael of the Daughters of St. Paul. So stay tuned to that. It's a great conversation. I'm Barbara Nicolosi. This is Church of the Matter.
Brothers and sisters in Christ, this is Jesse Romero. Join me on a pilgrimage of faith and discovery to Poland for the 100th year anniversary of the birth of St. John Paul II in May of 2020. Together we'll experience the faith, beauty, and culture of Poland and become imbibed with the spirit of John Paul II. We'll visit the town of Wadowice, where John Paul was born, and the city of Krakow, where he was ordained and later became bishop. We'll also travel to Jasna Góra and visit Our Lady of Częstochowa, and we'll have a chance to venerate the original image of the merciful Jesus at St. Faustina's Convent and the city that St. Maximilian Kolbe built for the Immaculata. Finally, we'll pay a visit to Auschwitz, where St. Maximilian Kolbe was martyred. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to worship and discover your own faith at places where St. John Paul II grew in his own love for our Lord. For more information or how to join this pilgrimage, visit my website at jesseromero.com.
Jesus said in Matthew 26, "Stay awake and pray that you may not enter into temptation." According to St. Ephrem, Jesus, who feared nothing, experienced fear and asked to be freed from death, although he knew it was impossible. How much more must we persevere in prayer before temptation assails us, so that we may be freed when the test has come? May God grant that we may withstand temptation and carry out His will in all things.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Hi, this is Barbara Nicolosi. Welcome back to Church of the Masses. And this is the radio station, kind of unique in Christendom, where we talk about the intersection of faith and culture. I am a screenwriter and producer. I've been a theater producer and a Hollywood story development executive, and I'm now an educator. I have a doctorate in creative writing, and I teach writers, and soon to be the head of writing programs at Regent University, writing in the School of Media at Regent University. That will be happening this fall. So we got more about that later on. But my thing is also that I'm a committed Catholic. And so I'm very interested in the intersection of faith and culture. And so I try to talk about topics of interest to people of faith that are regard the culture. And so probably no bigger thing that I encounter when I go out is that people ask me, for things to watch that are safe, right? People want to see, they want to see what do you like that's good that we could recommend? And then people will come, you know, they want it to be perfect. They will want television shows or movies where they will not have anything problematic at all. And this is a very tall order for our time. But anyway, I have a special guest. We can talk about why that's so hard and maybe a strategy for Catholics to watch media. My guest is Sister Helena Rafael. She's a member of the Community of the Daughters of St. Paul, which is a community dedicated to evangelization through the media. So, Sister Helena, welcome back.
Thank you.
Back by popular demand. So we had a great session last week where we talked about some principles for looking at the arts with the lens of the theology of the body. And I thought we kind of laid out a few good principles. So, but now we want to talk about some criteria for evaluating movies. And I think, how can we give people some guidance, knowing that very few movies are actually made by us anymore, right? You know, not that they ever were, but they're certainly not now. That there are legions of wonderful Catholic people making films such that everybody can trust them, right? It's almost impossible to find a project that is perfect by our standard. The question is, how much can you let in that may be problematic? So anyway, how do you approach movies with your theology, the body lens, in terms of coming up with some criteria?
Right. Great, great question. And first of all, I pray. I really do, because there's so much out there and images stick in your mind. And even if you think you're impervious or, you know, nothing can get to you and you're so jaded or you're so strong in your faith, everything around us shapes us, you know. So I always pray really for, I always tell God, please let me see what I need to see. And don't waste my time with anything I don't need to see. Like, I don't even want to give it my time, you know? So, and also that I won't be influenced by deceived, you know, by things that sound good or look good. So, but I think if we're really grounded, as you said, like in our Catholic faith, that's our number one tool. But it's not just about a bunch of morality, you know, how many counting swear words or something like that or whatever. There's much more to it than that. So as Catholics, we don't want to be Philistines. We don't want to be Neanderthals. Catholics have always been culture shapers. But you have to know something. You have to know culture. You have to know the different languages of the different media. So that's what media literacy is about. And if you're really a film lover, it would behoove you to know something about film, like how film is constructed, what makes a good film, et cetera. Because my number one criterion is excellence in filmmaking. That is the number one thing I am looking for. This is not a catechism piece, you know, and we all hate preachy films, right? We do not, nobody wants to be preached at. Even if you love the message, you agree with the preachy message, nobody wants to be preached at. So again, it's through the aesthetics, it's through the art form itself that we should be having an experience and being able to engage all of our senses. So Blessed James Alberione, the priest that founded my congregation of Daughters of St. Paul, who are founded to evangelize with media, he said he had such a high esteem for film. He said, it does more good than the school, the pulpit, and the printed word, or rather it can do more good. It has more influence. It has a more profound effect because he said it touches us on so many levels, emotional, memory, image, vision. We're put into a story. Story is eternal, you know. So he had such a great love for film, and that's why he made the big biblical films in Europe during the 1960s when the United States, Hollywood, was making our big biblical films, Ten Commandments, Ben-Hur, all of that. So he really put his money where his mouth was to those expensive films.
Let me just stop you there for 1 second and just to kind of highlight what you just said there, because I think it's huge. The idea that, and I'm going to say it in a different way in terms of the beautiful, but you're saying that the first criteria that we need to have is it an excellent film in itself, right? Is it well crafted as a work of art? So I would say, is it beautiful? Beauty being, you know, wholeness, that is nothing missing, nothing extra, and harmony, that is all of the parts are reflecting each other in the best light, right? They show each other off in the best light. And then the radiance of it, what is the kind of inarticulate communication that's coming through here? Is it something that is profound? Is it worth my time? Is it a worthy theme? And so if the thing has those three, it's like, okay, now we can let it be what it is in a sense and not pick apart the elements, you know, any more than, you know, you think about a piece of art from the Middle Ages of Mary, you know, the Blessed Mother nursing Jesus. And it's like, oh, there's her little nipple showing there, right? You know, it's like, oh my God, it's nudity, right? You know, but you don't sit there because like the whole of it is something very beautiful, you know, and you don't kind of pick apart the little elements of it. And I think that that is in some ways relatable to this bigger question that we're talking about with movies, that you don't want to, you want to kind of try to see it as a whole thing and then say, is this well executed as film?
Right. Right. And that, and should that be first? Yes. Mm-hmm. Because as we said at the last show, the ethics is in the aesthetics. So again, if you don't like movies, don't watch them. Like, don't even get involved and just like crab and complain and, you know, all this stuff negative about film. If you don't like, even like film, go read a book, be a book reviewer if you love books over films. But if you do love films, and for me, it was an acquired taste. I was much more of a book person, but I grew by studying film. I grew to love film. And as you were saying, my second criterion is the overall experience of the film. So again, looking at the film as a whole, and just asking yourself this sort of nebulous question of, why was this film made? Is it coming from a good place? And that is something very touchy-feely that you just kind of, as a human being, we have these spiritual gifts and abilities to kind of discern something. So I'm gonna say the name of the film. Dinner for Schmucks is one of the worst films I've ever seen, and I was so happy when it won a bunch of Razzies, at least one Razzie.
A Razzie, by the way, is the award the industry gives really, really the worst movie that's so bad that it needs an award, right? So, yeah.
And it starred Steve Carell, whom I really enjoy, but there was something creepy about that film. It was not coming from a good place. I cannot tell you why, and it was very salacious and lascivious, which didn't even fit with the story. It was like, insert joke here, you know, insert, make sexual reference here every 10 minutes. And I saw people in the theater with their 8-year-old kids. I forget if it was PG-13. I think it was. It should have been rated R. And I came out of there with just a horrible feeling that stayed with me for years. So I don't know what was going down there, but a friend of mine said to me, you know, I saw a film several years ago, and it was like one of the worst films I ever saw. And I just said to her, Dinner for Schmucks. She said, how did you know?
No, I think that intangible you're talking about, the sum total of the project. What is this trying to do? What is it trying to say? Yeah. What, you know, and sometimes you say, well, this movie is just trying to, get you to keep watching by appealing to your baser instincts, you know, kind of more depraved curiosity, as St. Augustine called curiositas, you know, or you say, well, this movie is trying to make us just obtuse to everything and say, you know, nothing matters, you know, and like get over yourself. And so you can kind of isolate that and say, this one is not worth my time. It's just really going to be something I'm going to regret. So
Or you get the feeling, like you're saying, filmmakers really didn't care about this film, but they were going to make it anyway because maybe it was going to make some money. They get a star, stick a star in there, put some jokes in, and sometimes you'll see an actor even who doesn't seem like they really care about the film or they don't like the film. Mm-hmm. And that's a big turnoff to me, because for me, actors have this you know, packed with the audience. And the best actors, we don't know how they do it. It's a gift. They are aware of us. Mm-hmm. And they're aware of our presence, and they project that on the screen. And they care about us. Because they're there to delight the audience. That's something I learned at UCLA. Mm-hmm. Delight the audience. Mm-hmm. That should be your goal. And if you're not delighting yourself as you're making the film, it's not going to delight the audience. You should be laughing at your own jokes.
Yeah.
And like, you know, putting up on the screen something that you want to see that you've never seen. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting how it takes an army to make a film, but that includes the audience. We are very much a part of this film. And then thirdly, as you mentioned, then I put it through the Judeo-Christian, incarnational, sacramental theology of the body worldview. Mm-hmm. Like, how does this match up with that? Now, it may not be coming from that place. You know, as you said, the filmmakers may not be Jewish or Christian or Catholic or whatever, but somehow they get from reason and from reading the language of the body, from their own conscience, from their own humanity, you know, the best of our higher angels and everything, they get it. They get it. And so they put forth these eternal truths, maybe in a way we've never seen before, you know, and certainly in a non-religious way, maybe, or maybe they throw some religion in. And it kind of syncs with theology of the body. So, or like you said, it's not perfect, but they get very far.
Yeah, I want to talk about that after the break when we come back, this problem of the not perfect, because I've evolved a way of figuring out, okay, how much is too much? You know, how much can I overlook when something, you know, talk about difficult or problematic material, really? You know, when does it become, okay, yeah, no, this I can't watch anymore, you know? And like I was saying, with Game of Thrones, you know, I watched the pilot and I was like, that's it, I'm done, you know. I have friends who are, you know, people that I really respect who love that show, but for me it was just too much and I knew it.
Yeah,
and so
right.
So at this, on the other hand, I watched, you know, Walking Dead and had no problem, and these same friends were like, yeah, that show's too much for me. So anyway, so let's talk about, when we come back, how do we know when I can excuse this? No, now that's a problem. All right, so stay tuned, and we'll bring Sister Helena back in our next segment. This is Church of the Masses on the Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network, and I am Barbara Nicolosi. We talk about the intersection of faith and culture. Stay tuned.
Welcome to our January 11th, 2020 Spiritual Warfare Conference. Every year without fail, this is our most popular, well-attended event. This year's Spiritual Warfare Conference will host Adam Bly, a Catholic demonologist and an auxiliary member of the International Association of Exorcists, along with Dr. Luis Sandoval, a psychiatrist who's part of the Healing, Deliverance, and Exorcism team for the Diocese of Orange. These two gentlemen bring tons of experience and expertise in the area of spiritual warfare. This is going to be a high-information Catholic seminar. I'll be there as well, sharing some riveting stories on the diabolical and liberation found through Jesus Christ from my best-selling book, The Devil in the City of Angels. Mark your calendars, come and join us, and meet other radio hosts from Jesus 911. Contrary to popular belief, spiritual warfare is not demon-centered. It's Christ-centered. Come join us and learn how to armor up and fight the good fight of faith. Catholics, wake up. Don't hit the snooze button. Join us at St. Christopher Catholic Church, 629 South Glendora Avenue, West Covina, California, on January 11, 2020. See you then. Strength and honor in Jesus' name.
This is Terry Barber. I want to thank you for supporting Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And here's an easy way to support us, by going to smile.amazon.com and type in Catholic Resource Center or Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And when you log in your Amazon account and you purchase products, a portion of it will go right back in supporting Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And it doesn't cost you a dime. I want to thank you ahead of time, because that supports us year-round. May God bless you and your family.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello again. Welcome to the second half of our broadcast. It's amazing to me how fast time goes on radio. I know I say that every week, but it's still astounding. And so here we are now. We're in the second part of our conversation with Sterlina Raphael, who is an expert on the theology of the body as articulated by John Paul II. And we're talking about how we can relate the theology of the body to the arts. So the last episode, which you can find up on our website, Church of the Masses, the page on Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network, the podcast, you will find that we articulated three principles for the arts from the theology of the body. And so I recommend you go back and listen there. And now we're talking today about some kind of particular problems. And one of them is this problem of nothing is perfect right now in media. Now, things have never been perfect, period, but now they're not morally perfect. So you'll have a show, say, I'm thinking one of my favorite all-time shows was Homeland, and it was, especially the first couple seasons, just a brilliant look at a woman who was bipolar, who was brilliant. So the conceit of the show was that Carrie was always right about everything, but she was also a little bit crazy. So you can, no one could trust her. And having said that, the show is an amazing kind of look at people trying to be noble in the context of the CIA and the things they had to do. And yet they would have some just graphic sexuality, what we call premium content in Hollywood, every couple episodes for the first, six or so for the season, and then they would lay off. But premium content, the requirement that, people are going to pay for this, so we need to give them something that they can't just get in regular network television. And so does that mean now, you can't watch Homeland or you can't recommend it? And that was true of Battlestar Galactica. And then you have a show like Game of Thrones, where I thought the sexuality was just way, way, way over the top, and it was perverse. I found it to be kind of brutal. And so for me, that show was too much. But anyway, I'd like to invite Sterlina in here now that I've been monologuing on it. And what do you think about this problem of, a show's not perfect. When is it too much? And I imagine you as a nun, too, you have a vow of chastity. You have to guard your purity, maybe. I mean, we all do, but you're a nun, you have a vow of this. And so how do you dabble in some of these creations from modern secular culture that are so problematic?
Right. So our founder, Blessed James Alderione, he worried about that because he got the Daughters of St. Paul involved in the film industry and rental films and everything way back in the 1930s. And he said he lost sleep at night worrying about the sisters. And he said, but I really came to the conclusion that the good that would be done would far outweigh the bad that could possibly be done to them. However, I think it's important to, the old dictum, know thyself. So, and if you know that you've had a steady diet of like lascivious material and you're desensitized, maybe you need to sensitize yourself again. But know thyself. If your body is reacting to things, if you're, be honest. We have to be brutally honest with ourselves about how is this media influencing me and my relationships with myself, with God, with my family, all of those questions. So first of all would be know thyself, and it's okay to look away. I remember film rentals myself way back in the day, and we would be watching movies in the convent, and the old nuns would put a piece of paper in front of the projector when the kissing scenes came.
Yeah.
We weren't allowed to watch them, right?
That's the equivalent of me putting my hand on the remote with my husband and saying, fast forward now, right?
And it's just, we have to remember, too, like, just keep reminding ourselves of the nature of the beast. All media is voyeuristic. We're watching things, but, yeah, okay, it's simulations most of the time, unless it's a documentary or a news thing or whatever. But we're watching things that we wouldn't normally watch, you know. We should never watch other people having sex. Mm-hmm. The camera does not belong everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what John Paul II is saying in Theology of the Body, that we violate the order of the gift, which he says is personal. Mm-hmm. You don't know him. You don't know her. You don't know these people. You don't know them as actors. You don't know them as real people, nothing. And we're not supposed to be watching them taking their clothes off and engaging in this intimate act, like, ever. Mm-hmm. So the camera does not belong everywhere. And there are delicate ways to do things. I think you always mention that wonderful example, Barbara, from Life is Beautiful, mm-hmm. where the husband and wife, the newlyweds, stroll into this sort of greenhouse, mm-hmm. and then flash forward 2 years later, they walk out with their 2-year-old son.
Yes, like 10 seconds later, the 5-year-old runs out, and you're like, oh, wow, I guess a whole bunch of stuff happened there. Yeah, you know, yeah, which I thought was just elegant. It was such an elegant way to tell the whole story.
That's, you don't have to get that hands off. But and remember also that film is not supposed to be a message film. Films aren't supposed to be preaching at us. They're supposed to be putting us through the experience of the main characters. So we just normally do that. We naturally do that. And do you want to be murdering somebody over and over and over again? It's very controversial, but there's something called mirror neurons in our brains, where we've seen this in monkeys. We can't do these experiments on human beings, but we've seen it in monkeys where a monkey was watching a person eat a banana, and the monkey's whole mind lit up as though his arm was moving and he was eating the banana. Mm-hmm. His salivary glands were going, his arm was moving as though he was eating a banana. So that could be also, we know we learn by imitation, not that, you know, it's cause and effect. We see a murderer, I will go murder someone. Mm-hmm. No, but you vicariously had that experience now.
Yes. And let me just cut in there. It reminds me of Father Benedict Rochelle was my spiritual director years ago in New York. He's gone to God now, but some of you will know his name, Holy Franciscan. And I remember once him talking to a group of us about being prudent in this regard of popular culture and media. And he said, the machine works. You know, and what he was talking about was, you know, don't presume that, oh, well, that doesn't affect me, because the body does function as a machine and it's all tied in together, you know, and in you're in a sense, you know, you have to be sensitive to that. So I think that's very prudent advice. You know, I have a formula that I use with this, and it's, I always say to people, okay, when we watch media, our disposition should not be as fans. Our disposition should be as doctors, or say apostles, disciples to this culture. And that's the first thing, is that the disposition. So in that sense, we never take that off. We never kind of just sink into being people who are putting their whole brain and heart and soul open to the creation of this. And so we're going into it, in a sense, to look for signs of the times, to look for threads by which we can engage other people, you know. And so that's one of the things. We watch some of these things so that we can be aware of how they're working, what people are talking about, and then are there any threads for evangelism in that? Do you resonate with that?
Yes, I probably, just because I'm a nerd, mm-hmm. I study everything anyway. Like, I can never just sit there and totally relax. I am studying things all the time, no matter what it is. That's, again, Father Alberione, that's the approach he gave us to life. He said, make everything a subject for meditation, like Mary did, like the Virgin Most Powerful did. You ponder everything in your heart. Like, look at that. Oh, interesting. Start asking questions about it, etc. And if you have doubts about, should I be watching this? Listen to your own doubts. Mm-hmm. Don't just blast through them like, oh, I can handle. Like, if you have doubts, listen to that doubt and stop for a moment. Pause something if you have to. And the idea of, like, assimilating. Yes, a lot of us like to come to media and movies for entertainment, for pure, we'll say, like, pure entertainment, but there's no such thing as pure entertainment. They did studies And they found that when somebody is ready to be entertained, they let all of their defenses down. And they actually learn and remember better than when they're all tense, because I have to study this to remember it for a test or something. Mm-hmm. People tense up and they don't remember things as well as when they're being entertained. Mm-hmm. So it's as though if we come at it with that approach, like you said, it's all about the approach and the attitude of I'm just going to enjoy myself. I just want to relax. Well, don't let all your muscles go totally limp,
right.
Your brain, whatever, because otherwise you're going to assimilate.
Yeah, you don't turn off. You never step outside your discipleship. We don't have that luxury.
Right,
and
right.
So
we are digital disciples. We are, I always say when I'm teaching media literacy, I say, do we want to glorify God in everything we do? Yes, including our media lives.
Exactly.
And people sometimes have never thought about that.
I think that, so there's the sense of that we watch a lot of this stuff as doctors to the culture, but I do think also we watch it as patients. Like we are part of this culture. This is the people, mm-hmm. people of our time that are speaking to us. And so, you know, that idea of, you know, saying, well, we're not really part, you know, we don't have the same problems that secular people do. I'm sorry, it's not true. I know as many right. divorces and and broken relationships and broken hearts and drug addictions in religious families as well as not. You know, we are not separate yeah. from the culture. So we have some things that we can benefit, especially if something is well made. Say I started off the hour with praising Chernobyl. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but it's an amazing thing. And you really have to watch it because it's about the destructive power of lies. And what lies do to any human community.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, in that sense, it's a great one to look at from the standpoint of the theology of the body. But, you know, we need to be part of that. You know, we need to listen to that as members of the audience. So I like this. Can you stay into the third segment?
Sure.
Okay, good. Sure. So what we're going to do when we come back is we'll talk more about this, kind of wrap up our two-day discussion on theology of the body, and maybe look at a couple of movies that we recommend that are ones that people might find surprising, or ones that I think, okay, this, you know, this is one that has some tough elements in it, but I think it's very it's justifiable. You know, I want to just say, I think that not everything in media should be for everyone, and that's a false standard that people, especially right. a lot of Christians, bring to stuff. You know,
right.
Everything should be suitable for a four-year-old. No, books aren't suitable for four-year-olds. Great classic works, and certainly we shouldn't put that burden on literary works of film either. So, all right, so stay tuned. We'll have our final segment with Sterlina Raphael. This is Church of the Masses Radio on the Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network, and I'm Barbara Nicolosi. Stay tuned.
St. Paul's Catholic Church.
This is Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio. This March, VMPR, in association with the Catholic Resource Center, will be hosting a special conference for the Adoramus Society. Adoramus at the Triduum, a conference on the spirituality of the Triduum liturgies, featuring Father Joseph Fessio, Dr. Anthony Lillis, and Christopher Karstens, addressing such topics as developing a liturgical spirituality, the spirituality of Holy Thursday, the spirituality of Good Friday, and the spirituality of the Paschal Vigil and Easter season. It all takes place March 14th, 2020, at the historic Sacred Heart Chapel at 381 West Center Street, Covina, California, 91723. You can register online at vmpr.org or call now 877-526-2151 to reserve your seat today for Adoramus at the Triduum. Sirach 11:24 says, "Do not say, 'I am self-sufficient. What harm can come to me now?'" According to St. Catherine of Siena, presumption is like vermin burrowing at the root of the tree of our soul. If we do not uproot it with great care and humility, it will eventually destroy the soul. May God keep us from all presumption of mind and heart, and realize that we depend on Him for everything.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow, that's 80%. RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello again. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Barbara Nicolosi. Welcome to Church of the Masses. The name of our show comes from a quote from a 1930s theater critic who said, "Theaters are the new church of the masses. They're places where people sit in the dark and listen to people in the light tell them what it is to be human." It's always a very ominous and scary quote, but I think it's true. And I think that people get their sense of what a good life is, how to live, what is a good choice, much more from media and stories than they do from churches today. And so church has lost a lot of her voice of authority, unfortunately, in our culture, and it's been supplanted by these other more entertaining voices that people are surrounded by. So we're talking to Sister Helena Raphael, who's a member of the community of the Daughters of St. Paul, a community that is near and dear to my heart as I invested 9.5 years of my life with the Daughters of St. Paul years ago. They gave me my formation, and I have drawn on it all the time in my work here in Hollywood and have used many of the principles that I learned from the community. So Sister is an expert in the theology of the body, if anyone can be, and she's very conversant in it, at least. So we're talking about that in terms of the movies, and I wanted to throw off my, so when can you watch difficult material or material that might be scandalizing for you or might have aspects that are problematic? I'm thinking of a movie called something like A Requiem for a Dream. This is a movie about drug addiction that came out many years ago, maybe 15 years ago now. But it's one of the most impressive movies I've ever seen. Have you seen it, Sterlina?
I have, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, one of the most disturbing, kind of isolating movies that makes you feel so bereft inside. And the question is, you know, if you don't have a drug addiction, should you watch Requiem for a Dream, or if you don't have it in your family, you know, or who should watch that kind of movie that really takes you into the darkness of drug addiction and does it in a very powerful, you know, by your criteria right away, you know, amazing piece of film. You know, it's a really stunning piece of work. And yet,
but it doesn't feel gratuitous.
Yes, it's not gratuitous at all. And, you know, and it's very much, you know, but it's still tough. You know, and you say, wow, who should watch that? And, you know, and there's other movies that are like that, you know, where you say, wow, Hotel Rwanda is pretty, pretty tough. You know, Romero, this is a very tough movie about the martyrdom of the Archbishop in El Salvador, you know, from several years ago. But, you know, you can think of some of these movies that document terrible things that have happened in the world. And it's like, wow, how much of that should we watch? You know, so do you have a standard for difficult material in the movies and how people?
I just ask myself, why am I watching this? Mm-hmm. So again, it's not good to just go, you know, become a couch potato and just anything that catches my eye. Stop and ask yourself, why am I watching this? Mm-hmm. Why do I want to? Why do I? Not that you need to see things, but why? Why am I even watching this for entertainment? Mm-hmm. And again, when you have those doubts or, you know, things are reacting in you, your soul and your body that maybe shouldn't be, or you don't like it, or you're uncomfortable, it's okay. It's okay. It's not that you're a little kid. I always tell the young people, I say, we're not old enough for it yet. But when I talk to the younger ones, I'm like, nobody's old enough for some of that stuff.
Nobody. It's a great point. You know, I have this standard I've evolved of the getting the aspirin for a headache, right? So it's supposing I said, wow, I have a headache. And then you say to me, okay, well, I know where there's an aspirin. It's over there on that island over there. But you have to swim through a fetid swamp and you might get diphtheria. And then there are going to be pythons circling around you to eat you and ferocious hungry crocodiles. But if you get through all of that, then you'll get to the island and you can take the aspirin and you won't have a headache anymore. So in other words, I think that sometimes media are like that. It's like, okay, well, there is a good here, but I have to expose myself to so much harm that the end, it's really not worth it. Yeah.
So for example, there's been three films as a movie reviewer I have not reviewed, not seen and have reviewed, which people say you can't do that, and I try not to, but sometimes they're so important. And what I do is I don't watch the film because either it's going to make me sin or it's going to expose me to something really horrible that I don't want to ever be exposed to. And I'll tell you which three films I did this for, and people get upset, but it made me do even more homework. I watched every interview. I did tons of research about the film, and then told people that I hadn't seen it. So Magic Mike, there's no way I could watch that and not sin. Mm-hmm. So somebody said something, a metaphor similar to yours. It's like, oh, but it has a good moral at the end. Mm-hmm. And someone said, yeah, but isn't that like wading through a pool of broken glass to get 5 cents?
Yeah.
You know, the other one was Don John, which has a lot to do with porn. Mm-hmm. And the other one was the Chilling Adventures, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, the new Sabrina, the teenage one, which has actual, seems real, like satanic spells and real satanic witchcraft stuff on there that you don't want to expose yourself to. So, but you want to be able to say something about it and kind of warn people. Could I go through some real positive films that, again, they're not perfect, but I think they get theology of the body in a great way? Hello?
Yes. Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Sure. I don't know if you're offering a theoretical there. It's like, no, absolutely. Yeah. Let's throw some out there that that would be examples of this. Yeah. You give one and then I'll give one. Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Then I'll do it in a different way. So I have four films that I tell people if you want to learn theology of the body real quick, you have to watch them in this order. First of all, is the first Hobbit movie, because that gives you the big picture, the spiritual battle of life that we're all involved in, good versus evil, the fact that we're not the only creatures on earth. There's all these other, there's angels and demons. Of course, The Hobbit is a fantasy, but we're all...
When you say the first one, you mean the one by Peter Jackson?
The one that I think the subtitle is An Unexpected Journey The very first one, by Peter Jackson. Mm-hmm. Then you go to Tree of Life, which is brings it down, the scale down a little bit.
I hate that movie. I hate that movie. But go ahead. No, I mean, I don't hate it because I think it's immoral. I think as a piece as a piece of art, I don't think it's immoral. No, I think it's just, I think it's self-indulgent filmmaking and he should have lost a half hour. But go ahead. You know, there's a lot of great stuff in it.
Roger Ebert called that a prayer in the last movies he reviewed. Anyway, it brings it down to the scale of the family. But families have history. So we go back in history. We see birth, death. We even see the family reunited in heaven, which usually never works, but I think it kind of worked in that film. Then we bring it down even smaller. Warm Bodies. The most theology of the body movie ever made is Warm Bodies. It's a zombie rom-com, a zombie romantic comedy. Young love. He's a zombie. She's a human. It shouldn't work, but it does. And they discover that their love is the cure. So if we can fix this male-female thing, seriously, in real life, we're going to fix half of the problems of the world. And then, last but not least, what comes of the male-female relationship but new life? Call the Midwife, the BBC series. Again, sometimes, you know, when I recommend series, it's really the first or second season that's good, and then it can kind of devolve.
Right.
So
yes.
I would recommend the first about maybe 3 to 4 seasons of that. Just an incredibly celebratory of life, new life, in the poorest neighborhoods, you know, the East End of London, where these young nurses, midwife nurses, live with these Anglican nuns. I mean, just watch it for the nuns. The fully fleshed out characters. One of them is a Redgrave. I mean, it is fantastic.
Wow, that's cool. I've heard of that show. I haven't had time to watch it. Yeah. You know, one I want to put out there is In America. And this is a movie by the daughter of, what's his name?
You like it because it's Irish, right?
I like it because it's Irish, yeah. So this goes, the audience, this is an inside joke that I'm Italian, Esther Helena is Irish, and she's been trying to convert me to the Irish cause for many years now. But no, you know, I think that the way the family is drawn in that, first of all, they're all real people with names, and the hopes and aspirations of the family are very clear. But what happens in the movie that's so interesting is, the father and mother kind of, get it on at a certain point. They send their other two children to have ice cream. But meanwhile, there's an artist downstairs, a black artist who loves the family, and he wants to give them something special because they've been kind to him. And so he does this kind of it's a very stylized representation of an artist kind of self-sacrificing to make the art come alive. And meanwhile, upstairs, the parents are getting together. And, it's not graphic, but you definitely know what's going on. And there is a little fleeting nudity in it. But it's the conception of the child happens at the moment of the artist's sacrifice, which he's giving as a gift of thanks for their kindness. And so it's like God is in the middle of that, and the artist and the family. And it's an absolute constituent part of the plot that this little boy has been given to them now a bit to replace the little boy that the son they had lost. But I think it's allowable. I think that it is absolutely not gratuitous, and yet a constituent part of what the artist wanted to say in the story.
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's some really great things on Netflix, too. You have to really hunt for them, but they're there. Mm-hmm. Glitch, which is an Australian two-season series, and they were smart. They closed it off at two seasons. That's all it needed to be. And it's not a zombie movie. It looks like one, but it's not. It's sci-fi, and it's time travel, both of which I'm not a huge fan of. But wow, if you want to see, again, what you're saying, like what it means to be human, beautiful, beautiful. Australian films tend to be very life-affirming, and I hope they continue to be. There's also some great films about couples staying together, married couples staying together when times get tough. There's a film called, again, Australian, Wish You Were Here, about staying together through tragedy, even through some infidelity sometimes. The Driver, a British series on Netflix about an older couple who might be breaking up. Locked In is a little indie film about adultery, the seriousness of adultery and what that can do to a relationship. Mm-hmm. Even the first season of Dr. Foster just shows what adultery really can do to someone. Mm-hmm. So again, sometimes illustrating the truth by contrast, not necessarily celebrating something wonderful.
Sure. Amazing list of films there. And, I would only add to that, there's a little film called The Way, Way Back, which is about a little boy whose family has crumbled and how a new family comes in and saves him, literally saves him by adopting him. And a beautiful, beautiful film. I saw it at Sundance a few years ago. So what the message is here is there's good stuff out there. There is good stuff. Yeah. It's not all garbage. So you have to be discerning. You have to be honest. And you have to approach things always as a disciple and as a doctor of the culture. But at the same time, as a patient, say, I am one of the people of my time, and I need the artists of my time that God is inspiring to help me on my journey. Sister Helena, thank you so much for joining us. We'll have to have you back again at some point. If you want to talk about something else, let me know, and we'll have you back. You're a great guest.
Please do.
Thank you. So this is Church of the Masses, and my name is Barbara Nicolosi, and we talk about the intersection of faith and culture. Please let us know if you like the show on our Facebook page. And thank you, Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network. Stay tuned for the future.
St. Faustina's Prayer for Priests. Oh my Jesus, I beg thee on behalf of the whole church, grant it love and the light of thy spirit, and give power to the words of priests, so that hardened hearts might be brought to repentance and return to thee, O Lord. Lord, give us holy priests. Thou thyself maintain them in holiness. O divine and great high priest, may the power of thy mercy accompany them everywhere, and protect them from the devil's traps and snares, which are continually being set for the souls of priests. May the power of thy mercy, O Lord, shatter and bring to naught all that might tarnish the sanctity of priests. For thou canst do all things. Amen. Virgin Most Powerful, pray for us.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.